Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
What's frustrated people is that I have not been able to force Congress to implement every aspect of what I said in 2008. Well, you know, it turns out that our founders designed a system that makes it more difficult to bring about change than I would like sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome back to the Savage Nation. There's been a concerted effort on the part of Obama, Ruth Bad Girl Bader Ginsburg, head of the ACLU and now on the U.S. Supreme Court for too many years. And now the New York Times is chiming in saying that the Constitution is out of date, it's old, it guarantees a few rights, and that it's time to change the U.S. Constitution. Nothing that is done by Obama is done by himself. He has minions in the media, minions in the judicial, and minions elsewhere, which is, of course, okay. However, it's not okay when they go after our founding documents, especially the U.S. Constitution. As I said to you, this is the most important story you've ever probably heard in the history of your life. You have a president who is a dictator in the making. He'd like to be a full dictator without any powers, without freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom to assembly. And he says so nakedly. He says, point blank, that he can't force Congress to do what he wants because the founding fathers designed a document, a system, that makes it difficult to bring about the change that he would like sometime, without even understanding that they envisioned a petty dictator like him emerging in the American system, without even understanding that it was a man like he that they feared would come to possess the presidency one day. And not to be outdone is the senile, virulent, far-left radical Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We played her speech last week, telling Egyptians not to look to the U.S. Constitution, but to look elsewhere, such as South Africa. And then today it gets worse. New York Times runs a broadside against the Constitution. And I'm going to read it to you. They say that the Constitution has seen better days. Sure, it's the nation's founding document and sacred texts. This is written by some creature called Adam Liptak. I don't know who he is, but I can only assume that his ancestors fled the Tsar of Russia or some other area in the Pale of Settlement. They fled specifically so that they would be protected by the U.S. Constitution, and now their subterranean grandson, Adam Liptak, is doing the bidding of the petty dictator by saying the Constitution has seen better days, and it's the oldest written national constitution still in force, but its influence is waning. They say that the Constitution is old and that it's time to move on. And they go to certain other subterraneans in the legal profession. They go to professors, don't you know, at various universities who tell us that the Constitution has seen better days. In an interview, somebody by the name of Professor Law, unto itself that's a joke. I don't know who that creature might be. Professor Law identified a central reason for the trend against the U.S. Constitution. And he says the availability of newer, sexier, and more powerful operating systems in the constitutional marketplace. The jerk says nobody wants to copy Windows 3.1, he said in a television interview. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, allegedly of the U.S. Supreme Court, but really a subterranean from the ACLU, said that to the Egyptians, I would not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012. She recommended instead the Constitution of South Africa. The rights guaranteed by the American Constitution are by international standards, frozen in amber, says one of these left-wing fanatics. As somebody by the name of Sanford Levinson wrote, whoever the heck he might be, another one who no doubt had ancestors who fled the Tsar of Russia, but now that he's awakened to the greatest freedom in the history of the world, Levinson, protected by a tenure system, protected by the Constitution, wrote a paper called Our Undemocratic Constitution. And this creature Levinson wrote, "The U.S. Constitution is the most difficult to amend of any constitution or currently existing in the world today. Parenthesis, Yugoslavia used to hold that title, but Yugoslavia did not work out." Then he says, "Other nations routinely trade in their constitutions wholesale, replacing them on average every 19 years. He says, "The Constitution is out of step." I'm going back now to the other subterranean, Adam Liptak, of the allegedly of the New York Times, saying that the U.S. Constitution is out of step with the rest of the world in failing to protect. Listen to this. Here comes the punchline. Boys and girls, please stop. Listen to why they're attacking the Constitution. "But the U.S. Constitution," he writes, "is out of step with the rest of the world in failing to protect, at least in so many words, a right to travel, the presumption of innocence, and entitlement to food, education, and health care." In other words, because the U.S. Constitution does not guarantee a socialist or communist view of the world, it is therefore useless. They then go on to say that it protects the right to bear arms, and that's no good. It says only 2% of the world's constitutions protect, as the Second Amendment does, a right to bear arms. Do you have any idea what is going on here? Do you have any idea that we have a Leninist, power-mad Leninist in the White House, Barack Obama? He has very powerful friends in the socialist international movement, such as those at the Old York Times, a well-known Stalinist front newspaper going back to the 1930s. It's always been Stalinist. And even on the Supreme Court, they want the Constitution to be rewritten. And so, therefore, I have a question I can ask you, but you know what the question's going to be already, so why ask it of you? Why should I ask you a question that's so obvious? You have a Leninist who is creating trickle-down tyranny, the title of a book of mine coming out April 3rd. My birthday's March 31st, by the way. And I'm sure that you're going to want to see a document as to what this tyrant is doing, has done, and wants to do to you. But if you want to comment on the U.S. Constitution, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. Shall I ask you the question to make it easy for my millions of listeners around the nation and around the world? Is it time to trade in the U.S. Constitution, or are you happy with it? Do you agree with the radical leftists who hate the U.S. Constitution and want to change it to something approximating that of South Africa, that we should throw away the U.S. Constitution because it's set in amber and it's no good anymore? Let's start in New York. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
God bless you, Michael. Live long and prosper.
Please, stop. Will you stop with the God bless you? Stop it, please. Stop it already, okay? Just make your point. Stop with the God bless you.
Well, that's a compliment, Michael, but to most people. But listen, Michael, the reason they want the constitutional rights to come from the government. They don't want the rights coming from God. They want to be above God. They want to eliminate God. These are progressive atheists. They've been calling for a rewrite on the Constitution for years now. That worm, Chris Matthews, who claims to be a Catholic, he wants a rewrite of the Constitution.
Chris Matthews was a has-been when he started on MSNBC. He was always a Democrat water carrier. He's a nobody. He's a shill. He's an embarrassment. All he does is front for the General Electric Company, which pays no taxes on the U.S. income. He ought to be ashamed of himself, but a man like that never had any shame. He's a Catholic like my dog's a Catholic.
He works for Pravda. He's an extension of the government. And Justice Ginsburg should step down if she swore to hold.
That's right. Ginsburg should be impeached. But you know what I think of the Republican Party. I imitated them yesterday on every issue that's important to the American people. And it sounded more and more like Beavis and Butthead. If you said to Romney or Gingrich or any of the others, any of them, anything about any of these social issues or essential issues, you know what they go? Constitution, huh? They would sound increasingly like Beavis and Butthead. Oh, you want to change the what? The Constitution? How about, where do you stand on gun control, Mr. Romney? Mr. Romney, where do you stand on homosexual marriage? I'll be right back.
Savage.
What we have been able to do is move in the right direction. And what I'm just going to keep on doing is plodding away, very persistent, And you know what? One of the things about being president is you get better as time goes on.
Plotting away. Now, did he say plotting away or plotting away? Very important difference, those two letters. Of course, in his case, we know he means plotting away, because that's what this man does. He plots. He plots away to get rid of the U.S. Constitution so he can have absolute power. And as Lord Acton wrote, power corrupts. Obama has power, and he's corrupt, in my opinion. But he does not yet have absolute power, and so therefore he is not absolutely corrupt. He has not been corrupted absolutely. But he has power, which has corrupted him. There's no question about it. The man is savoring the power that he has. He's the most powerful man in the world. Make no mistake about it. He's now turning the FBI against Rupert Murdoch. He's now turning the Justice Department against Rupert Murdoch. I mean, I don't know whether Murdoch's News Corp did anything worthy of an FBI investigation, but they're going after him because News Corp owns Fox News. Fox News being, I would say, a moderately conservative news outlet, which is what it is, does a very good job. But apparently even that modicum of dissension against this left-wing administration is too much for them. Now, if you want to live in Syria, then you let the government get out of control more so than it already has. I don't understand how you liberals could be arguing to change the U.S. Constitution when you understand better than I do what might happen. Why is it that you want to get rid of the U.S. Constitution? What is it that you want that you don't have? If you have the freedom to do virtually anything you want, for example, today, your friends in the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiel's in San Francisco, as you well know, they're just left-wing lawyers who got on black robes, took the will of hundreds of thousands of people who said no to gay marriage in California and basically threw it in the garbage. They said that we, in the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiel's, have more power than all the people of the state of California put together. The hell with you. We have the power to throw out your vote, and we just did so. And they said gay marriage is good, and that anyone who votes against it is committing an unconstitutional act. So there you have a constitution, don't you? And it's used by you guys in black robes whenever you want. So why would you want to throw out an instrument that you use at your convenience and dismiss when it's not at your convenience? You mean you don't have enough power yet? So why do you want to get rid of the Constitution? What is this? Why would a true liberal want to get rid of the U.S. Constitution? I could see a fanatic progressive, meaning a communist, wanting to get rid of the Constitution because they hate the people and fear the people. But I don't understand how a true liberal would want to dismiss the greatest instrument in the history of the world. Why? In Ohio, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation. Okay, that's another one. Is the call screener there, or is he sniffing glue today? That's two in a row. On a professional show, that's not acceptable. I will go for three. If the third one is in there, I'm going to fire the call screener. I'll tell you right now. I don't care who it is. I'm throwing him off the show. Florida, Tony, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. The Constitution should never be unwritten or anything like that. It's one of the greatest documents in the world since the Bible. Anybody who wants to rewrite it should be arrested for treason. Our Second Amendment right is put there to protect us from our government. And
well, why do you think Obama wants to get rid of the Constitution?
So he can.
Why does Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a far left snake of the lowest order, worked for the ACLU as chief counsel, sitting on the Supreme Court? That's not good enough for that witch. Now she wants to throw out the U.S. Constitution. How come she's not being impeached by the Republicans?
They all should be arrested for treason.
Arrested by who?
By the people of the country, the United States of America.
Well, the people. There's no organized people in this country. We're nothing.
Well,
we're nothing but a disorganized group of disenfranchised citizens is what we are. There's no cohesive people anymore. We're supposed to have an opposition party, but as you well know, they have committed Harry Caray in front of our eyes. Waco, Texas. Mike, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Those visionaries are our founding fathers were visionaries for writing the document that protects us from just the attacks we're having now. And I believe our military can step up because they all swore an oath to protect the Constitution from foreign and domestic enemies. I think Justice Ginsburg and
Yes, but hold on, but Mike, Mike, listen, I want you to see how clever Obama is and how he has plotted this so carefully. On New Year's Eve, what did Obama do while America was getting drunk and stoned? He wrote into the Defense Authorization Act the right for the U.S. military to arrest any citizen without cause. All they've got to do is say you're involved in terrorism. So instead of looking to the military to rescue us from a tyrannical regime or a would-be tyrannical regime, what you now have is a purged military looking to the citizenry to arrest anyone who might stand up to this tyrannical regime. We are a few steps away from descending into that of Syria. If this keeps up, we are a few steps away from falling into the chaos that has engulfed the Arab winter. That's what's going on in this country. That's how dangerous this is. But where are the dumb Republicans? These are the most momentous days in the history of the Republic. And all we have is that fat lobbyist ripping apart Romney, the corporate front man. And so who do we rely upon? You're going to tell me I'm supposed to throw my weight behind the neuron-deficient Ron Paul, the lunatic who doesn't understand that he's a new version of the isolationist of the 1930s? I mean, he may as well have been related to Charles Lindbergh. Sacramento, Matt, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, the Constitution's already been ignored blatantly. I know it's a big hot-button issue, but the eligibility issue is one big reason why that is. And the Republicans are just as guilty. This is where you see people like, as you call him, Pawn Vanity, trying to pass off Marco Rubio, that anchor baby, as an eligible VP, and that's a big joke.
But why is Vanity so in love with Marco Rubio? What has Rubio done that makes him such a great candidate, other than he's an Hispanic? He's in for Russia and he got lucky. But the fact is, doesn't he understand that this guy has nothing to offer anybody?
But Michael, don't you see the same thing? Even Boob O'Reilly is the same one who believes that the birth certificate is legitimate, and this whole issue with...
Well, O'Reilly is part of the establishment. O'Reilly's part of the mainstream media. Good for him.
Savage.
Well, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, as you well know, is the laughingstock of federal courts. It's the most fanatically Leninist of all. It's based in San Francisco with little mini dictators in black robes. And they said to the people of the state of California today, drop dead. We don't care what you did through a referendum. We're going to legitimize gay marriage, and the will of the people be damned. So it's now going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we're going to find out whether the U.S. Supreme Court will rule that marriage is a fundamental right protected by the Due Process Clause in the 14th Amendment. We'll find that out I don't think it'll be very soon. So here we are sitting in the midst of a power grab unlike any, I would say, since FDR, who was a power-mad individual as well. One of the role models of the Obamaites is FDR, as you well know. I spent a lot of time in my book, Trickle Up Poverty, describing to you how FDR was beaten with regard to one of his desires to take over an industry by four kosher Jewish kosher butchers in Brooklyn, who he had put in jail for the sale of certain kind of chickens and whatnot. They said, no, you can't tell us what to do because we're protected by our religious beliefs. FDR said, no, you have to comply with the federal law. He put them in jail. They came out. They sued the government, and they won. And it's the same situation with Obamacare, which is totally unconstitutional. So the administration uses the Constitution whenever it suits them and then basically tears up the Constitution when they want to push forward part of their radical liberal agenda. That's the way it is. The Ninth Circuit is the most leftist and most overturned court in the country by the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, I want to talk about marriage for a moment. There is a big difference between marriage and a sexual preference. Let me repeat that. Your sexual preferences are protected in the United States of America. But marriage is not the same as a sexual preference, which is what the people of the state of California said. They didn't rule against homosexuals. They didn't say there was anything illegal about performing any kind of sexual activity that you wish, as long as it's with consenting adults. What the people said was, marriage is a core value of a nation. while sexuality is part of a preference, period. And so now that the two have come together, you can see what just happened. The Ninth Jerket Court of Shlemiel's threw out the will of the people. And that's why we say it's time for us to have term limits for federal judges. The Ninth Circuit Court proves it. Legislation to recall judges by referendum must be passed immediately. This triumvirate in these courts, they're like a triumvirate in a dictatorship. They no longer have equal powers. They have absolute power. The powers of this country have gone disproportionately towards the judicial to the detriment of the people. And I believe that the people need to reassert their powers. Now, of course, I'm only a talk show host. The fact of the matter is we're supposed to have an opposition party called the Republicans that would help us when we are outraged by any such situation or by a president who wants to usurp the Constitution. But they're nowhere. All they're doing is out on the, they're out on the stump giving us stump speeches. And that's why we've lost interest, frankly, in the campaign already. If you want to talk about any of this, you can. By the way, I want to talk about marriage for another moment. This is very interesting, about a state sanctioning marriage and what it means. It's a very important question. Should a state sanction marriage to begin with? Any marriage. When I got married, which was quite a few decades ago, do you know that in New York City in those days, we had to take a blood test to make certain? It was called a Wasserman test. Realize how primitive our society was. They wanted to make certain that people with syphilis couldn't get married and have children. Can you imagine how Neanderthalic our society was, that they wanted to prevent people with diseases from marrying? What a horrible thought that a state would try to control the type of children that were born, meaning you didn't want to make, because that was ruled unconstitutional by the libs. And step by step, they made it so that you can fundamentally marry an animal, which is coming to a neighborhood near you as sure as I'm sitting here. That's coming next. This is not a democracy anymore. This is a hip-hop-cracy. We have a hip-hop-cracy in this country. New York, WOR, Robert, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I think you might want to rethink your statement before about getting rid of Ruth Ginsburg from the court right now, because if we get rid of her, then Obama's going to put a much younger, even more radical person on the court, and it'll take years before we get that person off the court.
Well, first of all, what I want has no bearing whatsoever. As you well know, the Republicans are never going to move to impeach Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Okay, God will have to impeach her first.
But I just think right now, I think we need to let the next president, hopefully not Obama, put somebody who's more conservative and is going to uphold the Constitution and not look for...
Well, you know, you raise an interesting question, because Obama has, what month is this, February, let us say, 10 months left in this term. If Ruth Bader Ginsburg were to retire for health reasons, he could appoint anyone he wants, couldn't he?
Absolutely.
Well, that's what he's going to do. I would say that if I were a betting man, and I'm not, I would say that there's a high likelihood that one of these left-wing fanatics who are 80 years old or more will retire and self-sacrifice in order to make certain that there's a liberal for the next 40 years on the bench. You've just raised a very interesting point. I really didn't think that far ahead. You're more far-thinking than I am in that regard. Thank you for alerting me to that, because that's a high possibility, that she throws herself out for health reasons, and he then gets to appoint one of the fanatics from one of the worst law schools in America, as he has done a few times now. Some of the most unqualified people in the history of the law profession are now on the Supreme Court. Are you telling me that Sotomayor is so brilliant as a legal scholar that she deserved an appointment to the highest court in the land? Are you telling me that? Do you actually believe that Kagan is so brilliant as a legal scholar she belongs on the U.S. Supreme Court? You must be joking. Okay, well, I think we move on, because this is not a topic that I would have been interested in high school. And I have to remember that whenever a civics teacher brought up the U.S. Constitution, I looked at the girl's ponytail in front of me at the desk, because I went to sleep. Or I continued to etch with a compass into the wooden desks in New York City and then kind of do a tattoo on the wood in order to keep from going insane and tattooing my own hand with a compass and cutting my wrists. So, therefore, let's move on to some other topics on the Savage Nation that might be more interesting. I can't tell you. I know the audience so well, and I know people's minds so well. I can tell you when you're not interested in something. This is not, you know, look at Super Bowl, right? I mean, aren't they in New York celebrating with a big parade today? Not for the Iraq war vets, but of course for our sports figures. Now, here's a story for the average man. Has Giselle become most hated woman in Boston? Patriots fans lash out at Tom Brady's supermodel wife after she blames receivers for Super Bowl loss. Now, there's a topic that anyone listening to the show can relate to. Now, here's another one. Obama invested $500 million in a loan from the so-called Department of Energy, which is nothing but a slush fund for donors. So the DOE gives $500 million to a group of so-called businessmen, most of whom are tied directly to the Democrat machine, to create a car called Fisker Automotive. And today, the automotive group called Fisker announces layoffs as it tries to renegotiate a $500 million loan from the Department of Energy. So you, the taxpayer, getting stiffed now for another $500 million from another black hole called another automobile company that Obama funded. How could this be going on? Well, it's going on. That's how it goes on. It's an electric car maker that received a $500 million loan from the federal government. Now today it said it laid off workers in Delaware and California. And they're going to basically try to renegotiate its loan agreement with the so-called Department of Energy, which is it's a slush fund. Fisker has received $193 million from the $529 million DOE loan, mostly for work on the car called the Karma. Isn't that cute? Which sells for $100,000. The Karma is a $100,000 electric car and nobody wants it. And so they're laying people off and they want to renegotiate their loan. Now, if you looked at where the money went so far, how much of it do you think actually went into, percentage-wise, producing this car? How much of it went into the pockets of the administrators? And how much of it got kicked back to Democrat politicians who pushed for the loan? Don't have the answer. None whatsoever. So I'm just giving you a little news along the way. What is the big news out there? There's lots of big news, but most people are a little stupefied by the power grab by the Obama administration. The gay marriage battle has taken a new turn today in California. A proposition that was voted in by the majority, 52% of the voters, was thrown away by a few tyrants in black robes. They took it away and took away the rights of the people and threw it in the garbage, catering again to their constituency. It'll now go to the Supreme Court. Dodgers signed Kershaw to a 2-year $19 million deal. 4 Yahoo board members to leave. Romney downplays expectations for today's votes. Arrest made in Fast and Furious gun scandal. Let's see what else. I don't know what else. Charles Dickens' 200th birthday celebrated. How's that? Does that interest you? Oh, that's a sure show killer. Show killer. Now, if I talked about some degenerate hip-hop artist from England giving the world a middle finger, then you'd be interested because you know who she is. But if I say Charles Dickens, you go to sleep. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome, 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 welcome. How are you? How are you? How are you? Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I'm just exercising my vocal cords to make certain that you're still listening to the Savage Nation. I realize that you're hungover from the Super Bowl 48 hours, 72 hours later, but we're talking about some important topics, so let's go to the callers, Houston, Texas. Anthony, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mr. Savage, your last segment you mentioned that you think Sotomayor was a terrible nomination for the Supreme Court. And I just wanted to dispute that because she's actually, the only one on the Supreme Court right now who's had previous experience as a judge.
So let me ask you this. What has she written in the world of the law that we should know about, we non-lawyers, that would distinguish her?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily what she's written. I think it's just simply the fact that she has actually ruled in cases.
Well, wait a minute. How in the world can you be put on the Supreme Court if you have no history as a brilliant legal scholar? Why would you be put on a court other than to push an agenda left or right? Now, she was put on to push the left-wing agenda, obviously, but what has she done legally that would distinguish her?
Yeah, I can't actually say what she has done legally to distinguish her, but she has.
So in other words, because she's a woman, that qualifies her?
No, what qualifies her is the fact that she sat on a bench before. She'd been a judge.
Oh, she sat on a bench. Okay, so how did she get that bench appointment based on what legal writings?
I would assume
she was pushed forward based on affirmative action from the day she graduated law school. Every position she had was based upon her, the fact that she was a woman and that she was an ethnic minority. So she was selected all along the way because of that, and now we have her on the Supreme Court. The point is she was not qualified for her first judgeship.
Well, if that's the case, why didn't they just choose some other Hispanic woman to sit on the bench? It didn't.
Well, why would it have to be a Hispanic woman? Why couldn't it be a white male?
Well, why does it have to be a white male?
Well, why couldn't they choose the person with the most brilliant legal mind?
I don't think it's necessarily about choosing the most brilliant legal mind. It's about choosing who is going to, I guess, uphold the values of the Constitution.
Wait. You're going all over the map. What do you mean it's not about the most brilliant legal mind? You mean you want an ambulance chaser put on the Supreme Court because they fill a quota?
No. What I'm saying is I think what constitutes what is good for a judge is someone who upholds values of the Constitution, not necessarily someone who knows every single law that's out there. It's people who...
Well, we didn't ask you to cite the fact that she knows every single law, but generally Supreme Court justices are known for their legal minds, not because they fill a quota system. But, I mean, I can tell by your voice that you're fairly young. Do you know of any Supreme Court justices in history who were known as brilliant jurists for any of their legal writings, for example?
No, personally, I do not.
Are you in the legal profession yourself?
No, I am not in the legal profession myself.
All right. So you if you were to investigate this, you would hear names such as Felix Frankfurter. You can laugh at the name, but he was a brilliant writer on legal issues. And some of the things he wrote stand to this day. Oliver Wendell Holmes, if you go way back in history, wrote things that are still quoted today. We're talking about giants in the history of the law as opposed to dwarfs. And unfortunately, does that help you with where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I think I can see that a little.
So if you were to Google, and I don't know if this would work, but given my background in science, I can pretty much search very quickly on any topic because I know how to load a topic. And the algorithms come out every time I search immediately on the first search. If you were to throw a search up that says greatest Supreme Court justices in history, you'll see some names immediately that would pop up, and you'll see why I'm trying to tell you it does matter who is put on the Supreme Court, just as who is made president matters. You can't just say a guy should become president because he should fill a certain quota, would you? You wouldn't say that.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so would you say a president should above all defend the U.S. Constitution?
Yes. Yeah, that is.
So how do you feel about Obama saying the Constitution is antiquated and he can't force his will upon Congress?
Oh, yeah, I completely disagree with that. I mean, Constitution's supposed to be...
All right, well, I'm just trying to figure out, where your head is at. I'm glad that we agree on something, but I think what I'm trying to say to you is I would not care who the Supreme Court justice was. I wouldn't care if they were gay, a lesbian. I wouldn't care what their ethnicity is. All I would care about is that they have such a brilliant legal mind and they're so neutral that I would go to sleep at night knowing that we're not going to be led down the road and become a banana republic by them. That's where I'm coming from. That's all. In fact, I'm going to do the search during the next break. I got to take my dog out from the radio studio and such. What do you want to talk about in the next hour? This is too heady, I think, for the average, right? And there must be something fun. Cars, boats, planes. How about private jets? You want to talk about your favorite private jet that you've heard about? Which one would you like to be on, or what's your favorite car? So we're talking about electric cars that no one wants to drive. What is it, like 300-400 volts sold? And Clint Eastwood said that America's at halftime because of Obama, because of TARP, Chrysler. I mean, I don't know who doesn't love Clint Eastwood's work. I do. I've always been a fan of Clint Eastwood. He won't come on the show. He only goes on the Leprechaun. He's a good friend of the Leprechaun, but he won't come on this show. That's his business. He's not obligated to go on any particular show. But when he's used as a tool of the Obama administration, as we all fear he was, I have an obligation to say something about it. So there's a little article about it now that was written by the good people at WorldNet Daily on michaelsavage.com. And the headline is, Michael Savage says Clint Eastwood was wrong. I'm actually proud of the fact that I said that. Michael Savage is a big fan of Eastwood. But when the legendary actor appeared in a Super Bowl ad that held up the government's bailout of Chrysler as a pillar on which to build the country's economic recovery, the talk radio giant called a foul. Eastwood's much-discussed commercial, It's Halftime America, strikes a somber tone, noting people are out of work, but pointing to the aftermath of the $12.5 billion bailout of the auto giant Sign of Hope. And then Eastwood says certain things. But Savage told his listeners that while most Americans believe that Chrysler repaid the loan, if you read the fine print, Chrysler ran off with $1.3 billion. It was astonishing for a man who allegedly is somewhat conservative to be talking about bailing out the auto industry, Savage said of Eastwood. Savage traced the $12.5 billion that the Treasury Department gave Chrysler in 2009. Last year, the Italian automaker Fiat bought the government's 6% stake in Chrysler, which closed the books on the Fed's involvement. In the end, U.S. taxpayers were out $1.3 billion. So, I mean, I do my homework. I mean, you could have an opinion, but if you want to do your homework, you come up with the true opinion. An opinion based on facts. Let's put it to you that way. So that's the story. The Savage Nation airs live across America on over 300 stations, including the one you are listening to. So if you'd like to call in on any these or any of the other topics, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We have an open line, especially for Clint Eastwood. If Clint Eastwood would like to, nobody calls this show except my great listeners. Isn't it interesting how you can survive without guests unless you're wall banger and you can't talk without them?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about this and that. I'm not going to review it because then we go backwards instead of forwards. We're shocked at the president's naked power grabs and the absolute vacuum on the other side. We're shocked at the concerted effort between the New York Times, Obama, and others to revise, eliminate the U.S. Constitution, throw it out and start all over again. And we're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court and things of that nature. All boring stuff that you probably would have gone to sleep over in high school. I know I did. I couldn't take courses like this. And as I said, the minute the teacher started talking about the Constitution or, you know, the Founding Fathers, it was like, you know, sleep time. But, you know, as you get older, you realize there was a reason that the high school teachers of our time tried to instill in us the wisdom of the Founding Fathers, the genius, as a matter of fact, of the Founding Fathers. And the genius of the founding documents, especially the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Without them, we're nothing. We're zero. We're just factotums in the wind. And when you have a president like Obama who is frustrated that he can't force Congress to implement every aspect of what he said, listen to it. Listen to clip one again. You have to hear it.
What's frustrated people is that I have not been able to force Congress to implement every aspect of what I said in 2008. Well, you know, it turns out that our founders designed a system that makes it more difficult to bring about change than I would like sometimes.
See, Obama relaxed because he was talking to the subterranean Matt Lauer, who was a stooge of General Electric. And Matt Lauer had the golden opportunity to stand up for freedom, but he didn't because he doesn't even know what freedom is. He's nothing but a... Well, you know what I'm going to say, and I can't use such words. on a national show. I'll call him a subterranean. That's my new catchphrase for the vermin on the left, the rats, the vermin, the snakes, the cockroaches, the lice who hate our freedoms, who fear the people, who detest every freedom that you have. So I now use one catchphrase called subterranean because it summarizes my feelings in a more genteel manner. And of course, as you well know, we all must be very genteel since we have a sophist for president who is extremely genteel and extremely dangerous in the fact that he uses his gentility to literally usurp the U.S. Constitution as often as he can. Now, if I were advising the Republicans, which of course is not the case, because A, I'm not a Republican, and B, they don't listen to this show. I don't know who they listen to, but they're committing harikari in front of our eyes. I would play the Obama soundbite during the campaign. I wouldn't stop playing it. When he says, I've not been able to, just play the Force Congress piece once again.
What's frustrated people is that I have not been able to force Congress to implement every aspect of what I said in 2008.
Well, stop right there. Stop right there. So then if it's Romney, they play that and they say, do you want a president who wants to force Congress to follow his will? No. Vote for a true Democrat. Vote for a man who loves the Constitution. Vote for Mitt Romney. They won't run it, though, because if they run it, you're liable to get the impression that you're not living in a republic or a democracy, which they don't want you to have. So let's move on to the callers on many other topics. And there is news out there, you know, just that it's not that exciting because it's just more about the corruption of the Obama administration. You know, little things like that. Another $500 million loan went up in smoke for another fake electric car company given to them by the slush fund called the DOE, run by that former a college teacher who won a Nobel Prize in physics. Therefore, he's a genius. They used him just as a stooge, a front man. College vending machine sells morning after pill. Should U.S. arm Syrian opposition? John Dumb McCain says that it's time for the U.S. should consider sending weapons to rebels. Moron. Moron McCain does it again. Do you agree with McCain? Do you think the U.S. should get involved now in Syria? Why don't you have Saudi Arabia get involved in Syria? Answer, because they're as despotic as Syria. Why don't you have the European Union do something other than watch child porn in Brussels? Answer, because they like to sit and watch child porn in Brussels. Do you think the U.S. should consider sending weapons to so-called rebels in Syria? Now, let me make another prediction for you. Since I'm the only one in the media who saw what was coming in the Arab Crescent, in Egypt, etc., and I told you what was happening long before anybody else. That's right, mark my words, old Mike Savage. Old Doc Savage saw it before anybody else. I told you what was going to emerge. I told you that the murderous, freedom-hating, women-hating, U.S.-hating Islamists would win in Egypt, and I told you that would happen, even though Hillary Clinton was going about with her fake smile giving the big lie about the Arab Spring. It was blowing up in their faces. Now we see what they have wrought there. Now, as bad as Assad is, and he's pretty bad, do you actually think that the so-called opposition is going to be any more democratically inclined than Assad? I will tell you they won't be. I will tell you right now that the Syrian opposition, so-called, will be as corrupt and as anti-U.S. as are the Libyan so-called rebels who we supported, like fools. They will be just as corrupt and just as Islamist as the Islamists who have taken over Egypt. So am I arguing that I'm in favor of the bloodshed? Of course not, but you'll say I said that, which doesn't matter to me because you always distort what I say. My enemies always distort what I say. What's important is that what I say is what I say, and what I say is what I write, and what I write is what I say, and what I say is what I write. So I'm not afraid of what my opposition says about me. All that matters is that you look at my statements for what they are in my books and in my articles and on my radio show. So when I'm asking you a big question, should the U.S. consider sending weapons to rebels as John the Claude thinks we should, McCain? I mean, is this guy as stupid as he sounds? Lawmakers suggest U.S. consider arming Syrian rebels as graphic videos emerge. John Dummy McCain and other lawmakers called Tuesday for the U.S. to consider arming the Syrian opposition as new videos emerge, purporting to show the bloody aftermath of the weekend's massacre in the Syrian city of Homs. The bloodletting has got to stop, said McCain, the shame. The Obama administration, though, pushed back on the idea, stressing instead the options of humanitarian assistance and increased international pressure. I actually agree with Obama. We don't need another war. I'm sorry, I agree with him. I mean, even a stopped clock is right, you know, twice a day. We don't think more arms into Syria is the answer, said State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland. Well, maybe they learned their lesson in Libya. They sent weapon after weapon after weapon, and what has it gotten them? Remember, Russia and China blocked the Arab League proposal calling for Syrian President Assad to step down. So if we were to send arms to Syria, we'd be going to war with Russia and China. We'd have a de facto war with Russia and China. Something's wrong with this picture. That's very bad. People are dying. I mean, Assad's a murderous, brutal dictator. We know that. But who do you think's waiting in the wings in these despotic nations? What do you think, they're going to be democratically oriented people? Never. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They don't have the basis to even understand what a free people are. This is the problem that you don't understand. Many of you are brainwashed children of the liberal establishment, and you think that all people are equal around the world in terms of educational values, in terms of education and values. And you think that if they have freedom, they're going to use it for the betterment of the majority of the people. You don't understand that they don't understand that. You don't understand that they have no such ideas in their, it's not even in their DNA. They don't know what freedom is. All it means to them is grabbing as much power as they can, as fast as they can, and asserting it against their enemies. And so when you combine that with the religious fanaticism in the Middle East, what you have is exactly what Hillary Clinton, Obama, George Soros, Brzezinski, and Carter have fostered in Egypt all the way to Libya. And now they're calling for it in Syria? No, I disagree. 1-800-449-8255. Not one caller on this. I don't know what's wrong with the people. They're not interested in anything. I think the American people are jaded. I think you're wiped out. I believe that Newt Gingrich has destroyed America. I personally believe that Newt Gingrich is responsible for the destruction of the American mind. I personally believe that Fatso has destroyed the Republican Party and the Republic itself. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about Syria. We've moved from the emerging dictatorship in America to the overt dictatorship of Syria. And we see the slaughter of innocents, or shall I say opponents, to the Assad regime. And we all oppose violence of that kind. However, we are now in a situation where the idiot John McCain, who encouraged arming the Libyan rebels, and we could see who they are today, the Libyan rebels, as you well know, are worse than Gaddafi was thus far, and they've yet to assume maximum power. Now John McCain is saying we should send weapons to the Syrian opposition, and I say idiotic, and I agree with the Obama State Department, which says that that's not going to help things, and we should use humanitarian and diplomatic maneuvers in the interim. And I happen to agree with them. As terrible as the slaughter is, it would only be worse if we sent more weapons and more such incendiary items into Syria at this time. We have a caller from Texas. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Oh, hi, Michael. Yeah, Jim Smith. I really appreciate what you're saying, taking a stand against John McCain's advocating sending arms to the rebels in Syria. We need to get out of that area and let those folks take care of themselves. It's a real shame that such atrocities occur in other nations, but we just can't be everywhere all the time.
And no, haven't we learned from Iraq and now Iran, where we have had no effect whatsoever in Iran? Afghanistan, rather. Haven't we learned that foreign intervention doesn't always work to the advantage of the American people?
Well, we should have learned. But I tell you, Michael, perpetual war is one way enslave their own people.
Why is McCain such a war hawk when his instincts are always wrong here? Look what he did in Libya. He was wrong about arming the Libyan rebels. So hasn't he learned from that? Obviously not.
No, they haven't learned. There's obviously some agenda that we're not aware of that they're pursuing.
Well, I'm going to tell you, here's my fear about what the agenda is for a guy like McCain. he fronts for many military contractors. And war is good for them. That's the unfortunate ugliness of what I think is going on here.
Well, that's true. That military-industrial complex is what Dwight Eisenhower warned the country about.
That's right. Beware the military-industrial complex, which I've changed to the government media complex. But here we have Lindsey Graham suggesting arming the Syrian opposition. Joe Lieberman has done the same. Why don't they just put on a uniform and go over there and fight with the rebels?
I wish they would.
Why wouldn't McCain and Graham and Lieberman just get on uniforms and become generals in the Syrian opposition army?
Well, they know that the generals of our military and admirals of our military are not allowed to use their military expertise to win wars, and they don't want to be there. They would rather be controlling those generals and admirals and blaming those generals and admirals.
Well, there's an interesting article that I posted on michaelsavage.com about a lieutenant colonel who's been through 7 or 8 tours in the war zones, and he says it's a complete lie coming out of Afghanistan. We're losing at every turn.
Wow.
It's horrible. This is a lieutenant colonel, combat lieutenant colonel, who says the men are dying to get out of Afghanistan. We've had no impact whatsoever. The Afghan police are corrupt. The Afghan government is corrupt. And that the administration and the politicians are lying about these so-called successes in Afghanistan. McCain should surely know that.
Well, he should. I don't know why he won't believe it. We've got a congressman, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. He's not my congressman. Ted Poe is mine. But Alan West is I'm certainly hopeful that he gets reelected, but the people in Republicans in Florida don't want him, and they're...
Well, no, I had Alan West, Congressman West, on my show last Friday, and he told the sad truth that the Republicans have gerrymandered his district to an extent that it's now a Democrat-majority district. They want him out of business because he is a true conservative and a combat veteran. That's what the Republican Party has become. It's basically Democrat light. I thank you for the call. Any other callers, guys, on the Syrian question of whether we should be funding the opposition? Edward, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. How are you today? Let me tell you about my background. Maybe you will understand where I'm coming from. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, please.
Okay. I used to be a negotiator in the Red Cross in the Middle East, and the first and last lesson I've learned that you cannot negotiate or help Islamic movement. It's very, very divisive, and they are planning on their own plan. They will fool you, take your money, take your help, and then they will turn around and stab you in the back. Now,
Wait, let me see if I follow you. I think I do. You're saying that the opposition is not unified and fundamentally they're not worthy of support?
I'm saying we should not fund anybody who is Islamic. And I'm sorry if I offend anybody, because the Islamic laws and Islamic beliefs are against our beliefs. So what they do is they will use us as a key to enter the door. And when they enter in the door, they will close the door behind them on us. So this is what happened
Interesting.
In Iraq. This is what happened.
Right. Well, that's what happened to us in Iraq. That's what's happening to us in Afghanistan. And now McCain wants us to do it in Syria again?
They will do it in Syria. Now, I tell you what, if the United States, Reagan time, listened to the voice of reason to the Christians in Lebanon, we could have had a base in Lebanon and would have been a big threat to everybody. But we lost that base because of...
Yes. Oh, I remember that horror of what happened in Beirut. It was a horror, just a horror. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back here on the Savage Nation to talk about whether we should be sending arms to the so-called rebels in Syria, as John McCain suggests.
Savage.
Here we are. You see, what the topic really is democracy. Popular rules. So, in theory, the will of the people sounds good. And it usually is good, except when it goes against the will of the dictators, as it has in the state of California, where the left-wing dictators just threw out the will of the people. The very same vermin, the subterranean vermin, who are talking about democracy in the Middle East and the Arab Spring and the will of the people, just took a vote by 52% of the people of the state of California who rejected gay marriage and said the people be damned. We're going to impose gay marriage on the people. And so that's the way it works. In other words, the subterraneans always use the Constitution when it suits them and shred it when it doesn't suit them. So why should we be concerned about Syria is the question. McCain says we should send arms to the Syrian so-called rebels. Apparently that fool hasn't learned his mistakes yet. In arming Libyan rebels, what have we wrought? Are the Libyan rebels our friends? Are you crazy? They're going to be far worse than Gaddafi. Just as the Muslim fanatics who have taken over Egypt are going to be far worse for us than was Mubarak. Just as Ahmadinejad and that band of psychotics are far worse than was the leader of Iran at that time, who they drove out, a pro-Western man. They drove him out on a rail. They ushered in worldwide Islamic terror around the globe. That was Jimmy Carter. So now we have it happening all over again under Carter II. That would be Obama. That's the mini Carter. At the best, he's a mini Carter, although I don't even think he's a mini Carter. At least Carter served in the U.S. submarine fleet. Obama was a street organizer, while we could say Jimmy Carter was at least a patriot and served in the U.S. military, which is a beautiful thing. Have we not learned our lesson? Should the U.S. arm Syrian rebels? I say absolutely not. If anyone's going to arm them, it should be the European Union. Where's the European Union on this? Why don't they do anything along those lines? What is this? The United States is the world's policeman? We haven't learned from our disaster in Iraq, our disaster in Afghanistan. Now we're going to get involved in Syria? This is total insanity. Virginia Beach, Toby, do you agree or disagree? Should we be in Syria? Yes or no?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Definitely not. I think they need to handle their own issues. We fought for our freedom. They should fight for theirs.
Well, we fought for our freedom, and Obama says that it's not free enough for him because he can't impose his will on the Congress. How do you like that statement today?
Oh, see, I don't like that. I don't like all the freedoms that they're taking away from us either over the last 10 years. So
I don't either. But thank you, Toby. Should U.S. arm Syrian opposition? John McCain has learned nothing from his mistakes, and he says that we should send weapons to the rebels. And many of you, of course, know this is another disaster. See, there's something you should know about government, all governments, good, bad, and indifferent. They're dysfunctional. In fact, the more democratic a government, the more dysfunctional it is. Let me repeat that. I don't know if you understand the theorem. The more democratic a government is, the more dysfunctional it is. The more authoritarian a government, the less dysfunctional it is, because it gets everything done that it wants immediately, or else people wind up in internment camps or in death camps. So I think a dysfunctional government is a sign of a healthy democracy, which is the lie that Obama's putting out. Oh, Congress is the problem. They're standing in the way of his progress. You don't understand the big lie, do you? They're supposed to stand in the way of his progress if it's, let's say, against the will of the people or unconstitutional or too expensive, whatever. They're supposed to stand in a dictator's way. That's how it was set up. And the only countries where governments are extremely functional are the dictatorships. North Korea, very functional government, extremely functional. They starve the people to death, and they live like kings and princes at the top. Very functional government. But we have a dysfunctional government. Israel's a very dysfunctional government. I don't know if you know that. The Knesset is a marketplace of ideas. They argue all the time. They're at odds with each other over everything because Israel's a true democracy, so it has a dysfunctional government in that regard. That's a healthy sign. Saudi Arabia is a very, very smoothly efficient government because it's a dictatorship. So listen to what I just said to you. I mean, look, what can I say to you? Wisdom comes from various sources, and what you just heard is quite wise. Take it for what it is. 1-800-449-8255. Any topic that you want to talk about is fair game. New York, WOR. Kathy, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I was listening to President Obama Friday after the release of the jobs number, the so-called 8.3% the decrease in jobs, and he was speaking on a number of topics, and he got to the topic of green energy, which always has to be squeezed into anything he says, and I just bristled when I heard him say, and I've heard him say this before, he said that he was going to double down on green energy, and it made me
Well, you've got to remember something. The green energy rubric is a slush fund for Democrat donors at the highest level. You understand that? That when you put $1 billion into a fake company, some of it flows back to your campaign?
Well, they're not donors. I think they're more like bettors.
I disagree with you. How do we know how much of the Solyndra money wound up back in the hands of Democrats?
We'll never know, but it's not good. It's not good for
No, it is not good. No, it's a slush fund for the Democrat machine. That's what green energy is. It's sort of this PC area. Oh, I'm for green energy. Oh, who's against green energy? Well, anybody who knows that green energy is fraudulent is against green energy. We'd all like cars that run on the sun. I'd love to have a car that runs on sunlight. It doesn't exist. Sacramento, Marianne, on the Syrian question. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I want to compliment you. You're the only one taking a correct interpretation of what's occurring in Syria. I have extended family there and also in Beirut. And the media, unfortunately, is not getting out that what is really occurring is, as you are articulating, a clash between the Saudi faction, including the Kurds, and the Christians who are aligned with the Alawites. And the Alawites.
Well, let me see if I can follow this. Who comprises the majority of the Syrian opposition?
It's Kurds currently, and those who are Sunni, some Turks, because Syria is comprised of many different people since the changing of the border, and Homs is traditionally a city that is Sunni.
Okay, so is this a Sunni-Shiite battle again?
It's a Sunni Christians, the Syrian Jews, and the Assyrians, A-S-S-Y, Assyrians, are aligned together with the Alawites, which, of course, is what Assad is. And the opposition is being fueled by the Saudis. It's Saudi money due to the
fact... I see. So Assad, as dictatorial as he is, has the support of the Christians and the Jewish Syrian community?
Yes. Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I really truly didn't know that. But I do know this, that if we haven't learned by our mistakes in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Libya, when are we going to learn?
Well, there's a large Assyrian, as you know, Assyria, A-S-S-Y-R.
No, I know. I have an Assyrian friend who explained to me who the Assyrian people are. I actually have someone of that background in San Francisco, so it's not a stranger to me.
Right. Yeah, well, that's basically what's going on.
So am I the only one who got this right instinctually? Is that it?
Yes, because you understand the historical imperative relative to the breakup of the Ottoman Empire. And that's basically, you're still dealing with that sort of factionalism.
But why is it that McCain would be so dumb that he would say send weapons to the so-called opposition?
Well, he's an idiot, and he doesn't understand the sophistication of what the opposition comprises.
And does he also work for the defense contractors who would benefit from sending weapons to Syria, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I think that McCain is long known to be part of the military-industrial complex and fundamentally is a salesman for these corporations.
The first al-Qaeda enclave was in Arizona. You know, that's why you had the whistleblower out of the Phoenix office of the FBI. So Arizona.
Oh, you mean right under McCain's nose?
Yes. And this is
wow. What a disaster he's been. Ever since he set off that rocket on the aircraft carrier, he's been a disaster for America, continuously setting off rockets in Congress. This guy is a rolling danger to the country.
Well, I grew up in Coronado, so we all know about McCain. So, you know, Navy.
Wow. He is so misunderstood by the American people. I mean, he's got our sympathy because he suffered for so many years in the at the torture of the hands of the Vietnamese in the Hanoi Hilton, but that doesn't justify what he's been doing ever since.
No, my mother worked for Admiral Stockdale, so everybody in Coronado knows McCain's storyline, you know. So.
Wow. Well, at the end of the conversation between us, Marianne, the bottom line is you say don't arm the so-called Syrian opposition.
They're a false opposition. It's an internal.
They're a false opposition.
Correct.
So, what, you're not arguing that Assad is a benevolent leader, are you?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But what we don't want is another, we don't want any more Christians and affiliated peoples who were at least sophisticated and educated massacred. And that's exactly what's going to happen.
Aha. Uh-huh. So Assad is, I see what you're saying. So the opposition is going to be what, more or less the Islamists again, the uneducated Islamists?
Assad speaks fluent French. He's an ophthalmologist. He's highly educated.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. Mengele was a doctor, but I mean, so that he has a professional background doesn't distinguish him in any way necessarily. But what I'm asking you, are the opponents to Assad fundamentally going to fall in line with the Islamist crescent that is emerging in the Middle East?
Yes.
All right. Well, that's a very important point, because I intuitively sense that. I intuitively sense that the so-called opposition in Syria, who Anderson Cooper is crying for again on the television set because they look so good in tight dungarees and they all have cell phones, so therefore they all must be modern and good. Again, he's feeding into the propaganda line of the emerging Islamist factions in the Middle East, as the moron did in Egypt. Okay, I see it. Well, I guess it takes a little time and patience to really understand what's going on and not be a knee-jerk liberal who says, well, he's a bad guy and they're the good guy. I'll be right back.
Savage.
And the band played on, and the band played on as the good ship America has struck the iceberg, with the captain at the helm saying that the crew doesn't listen to him and he has no ability to tell the crew what to do while the ship is going down. We have a bishop in Harrisburg, PA, who says that Hitler and Mussolini would love our public school system. Here finally is a voice coming out of the church that gives all free men hope. Listen to clip 20.
In the totalitarian government, they would love our system. This is what Hitler and Mussolini and all of them tried to establish. A monolith. So all the children will be educated in one set of beliefs and one way of doing things.
A Pennsylvania bishop says Hitler and Mussolini would love our public school system. Bishop Joseph McFadden, I don't know if you listen to the Savage Nation, but you're a hero to all of us for daring to break with the church and stand up to the incredible dictatorship that we see emerging right under our eyes, right under our noses. But the issue today that we're talking about right now in the Savage Nation is really not the educational system, nor the corruption of the administration, which is astonishing, a daily astonishment. We are talking instead about Syria. Syria, if you look at the map, is adjacent to Iraq. We have not learned from the debacle in Iraq, and now John the Shane McCain says we should be arming the rebels. International pressure grows, bombing of rebels resumes by Assad, and the U.S. now is told by McCain and others, leave him in the warmonger, McCain the warmonger, a few others, that we should be sending at least weapons to Syria. They haven't learned what disasters they have fostered from Libya to Egypt, let alone the disasters of Iraq and Afghanistan. But now they're saying, now let's get involved in Syria. So I ask the American people who listen to the Savage Nation what you think. That's what I'm asking you. What do you think? Do you agree with McCain that we should be sending arms to the Syrian people? I don't think so. I know so. Some disagree. Bala in Idaho, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Ms. Dr. Savage. I just must say, look to our history. Look to our Revolutionary War. Who helped us during that? The French. The French actually supplied us weapons because the British were bringing in hired guns, as they call them, the Huns. I know that's a racist term for the Germans.
But wait, let's pull. Okay, that's a good point. But did the French do it out of altruism or because they wanted a part of the natural resources of the United States?
I think out of both. Out of both. We have interest there as well for preserving peace and stability around Israel.
Well, what do we actually need in Syria?
We need to have a nice, stable area in Syria. We need to have it stable.
We need a stable Syria. Could it get more stable than what we have with Assad?
It needs to.
I mean, Assad's not at war with anybody, is he? Are you sure that the opposition will not go to war with its neighbors, including Israel, immediately if it attains power?
We've gone to war with Mexico. We went to war with France during our revolution.
So boy, now you're changing the topic again. We're talking about Syria. I think we need to focus on one nation. So let's go back. Did we win anything from going into Iraq?
Did we win anything? Absolutely not, no.
Okay. Have we won anything by meddling in Afghanistan?
Absolutely not.
All right, we're pragmatists. Have we been right by backing the so-called Libyan rebels and killing Gaddafi?
Yeah, because we didn't put boots on the ground. We just gave them weapons. We helped them.
But do you know what's has emerged in Libya? They're pulling the toenails out of diplomats from other countries.
Oh, hey.
They're monsters. These are Islamic monsters.
I'm not saying that at all, but I'm saying we do very terrible things.
Well, what about Egypt? We had Mubarak, who was our best friend for almost 40 years, and Hillary Clinton and Obama and Soros overthrew Mubarak and told us that it would be a new dawn in Egypt. You know what's going on in Egypt, don't you?
Yeah, it's birthing democracy. We had a revolutionary war ourselves.
No, it's not a burgeoning democracy, a burgeoning Islamic dictatorship. What world are you living in? Are you saying the Muslim Brotherhood is a good thing?
Absolutely not, but freedom is a good thing.
Wait a minute. That's who is taking control in Egypt.
All control of Egypt? No, sir, not all control. You're sensationalizing it, and I respect you like you don't even know.
Wait a minute. I'm not sensationalizing it. The Muslim Brotherhood is becoming the dominant political force in Egypt.
Are they going to go to war with Israel? Are they going to keep their thumbs
Let's put Israel aside. They actually have said that they will. They actually have said, yes, that's one of the chief things that they want to do. Have the opponents to Assad in Syria. They have said that the minute they have power, they're going to re-seize the Golan Heights, setting off World War III. I think you've got to see the chess game here, not the checkers game.
Well, listen, Assad is a puppet for Iran. We absolutely know that. The Assad is being propped up by Iran. So anything
I don't know that we know that. Where did we read that Assad is a puppet of Iran? It looks to me like the opposition are puppets of Iran.
I highly doubt that. I know Assad is in bed with Iran wholeheartedly.
Bala, that we disagree on who's in bed with who. What business do we have in Syria right now after all the mistakes this country has made ever since Vietnam?
You know, I believe that we have an obligation as a free country who was helped at one point against the biggest, most large...
Oh, wait a minute. You're talking in a vacuum, though, Bala. We're no longer this rich, great, wealthy, powerful nation that can go around the world helping other countries. We're a basket case ourselves. We're wholly owned by China and other countries. Where are we supposed to get the money from?
I don't count us out there, brother. I know you're a real American. I know you are. I hear it from your heart. I listen to your show all the time. Don't get me wrong. I hear where you're coming from. But, you know, we have something greater to export to everyone, and that is freedom. And yes, they need to fight for it, but we need to help them with real weapons.
Well, I understand the idealism that you are expressing, but in this case, I think you're on the wrong side of the equation. It's very similar to Mubarak. As dictatorial as he was, as oppressive as his regime was, he was a better friend to America than are the emerging Islamic fascists in Egypt. And I would say that quotient holds in Syria as well. As horrendous as Assad is, I believe that what is waiting in the wings will be much worse, especially for our security interests. Moreover, you're ignoring the fact that China and Russia have vetoed any attempts to intervene in Syria. You know that this would put us at odds with China and Russia, which is not a good thing right now.
No, I hear you, and I respect
you. All right, well, let's go away, friends. You know, we don't have to disagree with each other and hate each other as a result. We're not Democrats, after all. We're decent Americans and conservatives. We can disagree and go away, friends. This is The Savage Nation, another big hour on all of your local stations. Stay on that dial.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up!
who should certainly be aided by all the Constitution writing that has gone on since the end of World War II. I would not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a Constitution in the year 2012. I might look at the Constitution of South Africa. That was a deliberate attempt to have a fundamental instrument of government that embraced basic human rights, had an independent judiciary. It really is, I think, a great piece of work that was done. Much more recently than the U.S. Constitution, Canada has a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It dates from 1982. You would almost certainly look at the European Convention on Human Rights. So, yes, why not take advantage of what there is elsewhere in the world?
Wherever you turn, it's the Obama machine against the Constitution. Well, why do I say that? Well, today an article came out in the Old York Times saying that the U.S. Constitution is out of date. It's old-fashioned, and people around the world don't refer to it anymore. It's time to move on.
What's frustrated people is that I have not been able to force Congress to implement every aspect of what I said in 2008. Well, you know, it turns out that our founders designed a system that makes it more difficult to bring about change than I would like sometimes. What we have been able to do is move in the right direction. And what I'm just going to keep on doing is plodding away, very persistent. And you know what? One of the things about being president is you get better as time goes on.
Obama and communist press make push down U.S. Constitution is my headline. Read all about it. What else is on the website? Commie Court in San Francisco, the federal appeals court called the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiels, overruled the ballot initiative on gay marriage and said gay marriage is a wonderful thing, and people who voted against it are unconstitutional. So in other words, a group of rat judges in black robes said the people be damned. On the top right, Savage says Clint Eastwood was wrong. Savage says he's a big fan of Clint, which I am, but he was wrong in promoting the idea that the bailout of Chrysler by Obama was a good deal for us. It wasn't. U.S. taxpayers lost $1.3 billion on the Chrysler bailout.
All that matters now is what's ahead. How do we come from behind? How do we come together? And how do we win? Detroit's showing us it can be done. And what's true about them is true about all of us. This country can't be knocked out with one punch. We get right back up again, and when we do, the world's going to hear the roar of our engines. Yeah, it's halftime, America. And our second half's about to begin.
Next, Abuse of Power. If you haven't bought it yet, it's still time to do so. Don't miss it. It's great reading for the big weekend coming up. In blaming mankind for causing snow across Europe, Greens sound eerily like 16th century witch hunters. In other words, now they're blaming the snow on global warming. I don't know if you can believe this. The mad scientist is saying that the warm was caused by global warming. Now the cold is caused by global warming. Give them more money. In other words, they're full of you-know-what, and it isn't snow. British Muslims try to ban negative reporting of Islam. The group is tied to the Muslim Brotherhood. Will the weak-willed British government cave into them? Probably. Obama blames founding fathers for not letting him force Congress to do what he wishes. Have you ever seen a president like this who is such a dictator?
What's frustrated people is that I have not been able to force Congress to implement every aspect of what I said in 2008. Well, you know, it turns out that our founders designed a system that makes it more difficult to bring about change than I would like sometimes. What we have been able to do is move in the right direction. And what I'm just going to keep on doing is plodding away, very persistent. And you know what? One of the things about being president is you get better as time goes on.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com. I went out onto a mountain this morning. I normally bicycle in the morning, not early, late in the morning, after I've done all my emails and had the breakfast and calculated how much cholesterol versus how much fish oil versus how much vitamin E versus how many milligrams of this and milligrams of that, before I titrated my body ready for another day on the slopes of America. Then I go out on a bike ride, but I didn't want to ride today. I'm bored out of my mind. So I hiked up a mountain in the San Francisco Bay Area because it's eerily like a very, very spring day here. There's no rain. There's a terrible drought. People are enjoying the weather naturally, and myself included. And so I go up to an eerily quiet mountain in the Bay Area and hike by myself. And I look at the rocks, and I try to say to myself, Michael, you're a trained scientist. You're in the media, which is a pretty low-life job to begin with. You try to elevate the dialogue to a certain extent in what you do. You don't succeed, obviously, because the people only want to hear the mud. They don't want to hear about anything above the layer at the bottom of the ocean. They want to lay with the crustaceans, because apparently the politicians today are like crustaceans. Zero leadership. And I look at this, and I realize that the rocks I'm looking at on top of this mountain, these bluish rocks, were a result of a cataclysm that began about 165 million years ago. And they were thrown up into the air, onto the surface of the earth at that time, onto the top of this mountain. You say, well, wait, now you're getting off the track. Now you're talking about serpentine rocks on the top of a mountain. What does that have to do with Newt Gingrich and the election and Obama the communist? Well, I don't know what it has to do with it. I mean, you know, you ask yourself, if you're in this business, try to put some perspective on this. You have one gang of interests versus another gang of interests. They're called Democrat gang, Republican gang. You have two competing philosophies as to how the economy should be run. One gang says, take from everybody who earns and give it to the non-earners. Tax those who work and don't tax those who earn very little. The other people say, wait a minute, that's not fair. But fundamentally, there's no difference in them socially. So now we have Newt Gingrich, who claims to be a conservative, claiming that a fiscal conservative candidate is bad. So what does he want? The answer is, if you're stupid enough to not understand this, I can't help you. That's why today I had to pull myself out of all of this and go up to the serpentine rich areas of this mountain and look at some of the mountaintop. And as I'm looking at the rocks, I got to tell you, it's related to the economy in a way. I know I'm a little, you know, discursive here, but I look at the big rocks on the top of this mountain, and they're made up of magnesium, nickel, cobalt, chromium, etc. And I think back to the Civil War that almost bankrupted America, and I realize that here in California, in a neighboring state of Nevada, we had, which was once the largest silver stores, I think, discovered at the time, the Comstock Lode. And do you know that the Comstock Lode of silver was used to pay off the Civil War debt? Now, think of what I just said to you. The war cost a great deal of money. The war nearly bankrupted America. But in those days, the politicians couldn't just print money. The money was tied to silver and gold. And so they used the silver, the minerals, in other words, in the earth of Nevada, the natural resources of Nevada, to pay off the war debt. Now, speed the clock forward. We have the Iraq War, which cost this country about $3 trillion, according to some estimates. Those ungrateful SOBs in Iraq have not sent us so much as a barrel of oil, because we haven't taken it, nor have we demanded it. You know what I feel about that. We should have taken the oil to pay off the war debt, at the very least. But the war debt was never paid off, and that was the beginning of our bankruptcy. Now, you can blame the welfare state all you want, and believe me, there's plenty of blame for the welfare state in terms of our bankrupt state. But the fact of the matter is, it was the war in Iraq that probably began the road that we will never come back from. We have not yet paid off the Iraq war debt. We're not paying off the Afghanistan war debt. Where in the world do you expect this to come from? I ask myself every day. When in fact, they're not paying off the debt. What should we talk about? Serpentine rocks? Would you like me to talk about hiking on the mountain today? Serpentine rocks? And the fact that within 110 years, everyone listening to the show will be dead? Do you realize we all share something in common? We're all traversing through the universe at the same time. And that within 110 or so years, everyone listening to this program, in fact, everyone on the planet, whether they were just born or they're 95 years old, will be off this planet. You'll be gone. And you'll just be part of the compost, if at all. And that when you look at a mountain like this and you realize that it was created about 165 million years ago, you know, you realize that life unto itself is a miracle. Our place on this earth is miraculous. It's only for a short dance in the sun that we're here to begin with. How much can I talk about what these empty suits from television have to say about reality? How much can we take of this? What country are we living in that we permit this to go on? How did the system devolve to this point that we, the people, don't even vote and we watch others vote? How can we take any more of this? Can't we have the election? Can we call for the election 10 months early? Think of all the billions of dollars that could be saved if we said no more primaries, cancel the primaries, hold the election March 31st. Obama versus Romney, period. He's the leader in the poll. We're stopping it all right now. For the sake of the economy, for the sanity of the American people, we're holding the election March 31st. And get it over with.
Savage.
Play the Life Coach theme so they know what we're talking about in the Savage Nation. Yeah, oh, that's nice. Desafinado. Desafinado. That's Stan Getz, right? Yes, Stan Getz, Desafinado. 1958 Chrysler was what I had at the time. My father's used car with it. She had a big block Hemi engine in it, I remember. I remember I got T-boned in a crosswalk after an afternoon with a Playboy bunny. No, in those days you could drive after a nice afternoon of pleasure. Today you go away for 7 years. I wasn't speeding. He hit me, and the guy went through a red light. He T-boned the car, and like a Hell's Angel hitter came over. He bought the car for the engine, I remember. I think he paid me $300 just for the engine. They hauled the Hulk away. It was a big car, beautiful engine. Incredible. See, every song has a certain memory attached to it. What are they calling? Okay, Las Vegas, Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation. Mike, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Doc. I want to know if you're ready for art lesson number two here for you.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
All right. Before we talked about doing some tracing with graph paper.
Okay, yeah.
Now you got to keep the picture, the photograph that you took. You got to keep it on.
You know what? No, Mike. Truthfully, nobody wants to. That's not art tracing a picture, is it?
I'll tell you why. You're taking the photograph, and Norman Rockwell. He did the same thing, but he did with projection screen.
What do you mean? He projected an image on a screen and painted over it?
No. He just drew the outline. You're not painting it. You're just going to draw the outline. Very
yeah.
Light lines. You're not doing the whole picture.
I'm not painting anymore. I put my paints away since I came back from Florida. It's very interesting. The light here doesn't do the same thing to me that the light in Florida did. The light in Florida was so intense that I started to paint. Now that I've come back to California, although it's beautiful, the intensity is not the same. So my paints are in the top of a closet. I'm not interested in painting again. Isn't that weird how light is so different in different parts of the world? But I like his idea of tracing. That's cheating, as far as I could tell. But, you know, look, John Nagy launched the art careers of many, many people, which reminds me of the campaign we're watching. It's like a campaign created by John Nagy, where it's the numbers. You just follow the numbers and something comes out of it, you know. What is this? Is that a call? No one's calling? Does anyone have a question? Not a question in the whole bunch. No, please, I cannot have any. If I see the word Romney, Santorum, Paul, Gingrich, or whatever else the names, I'm not taking the call. Blank them out. I'd rather go to a blank screen like an artist and trace on my own, on my call board. I can't take it. I swear to you, Mike, I'm regurgitating mentally from this. 15, 16 debates, I've had enough. The bottom was yesterday when the bottom-feeding crustacean, Stephanopoulos, asks about contraception in the middle of a world like this. Yeah, here's a lifestyle question. Mike in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I wanted to ask, my 19-year-old son is a liberal arts major, and he's a really good kid. He's straight. He's into playing guitar and video games. And other than that, he knows not what he wants to do. And I'd really like to help him refine his search in terms of a career goal.
How old is he?
19, just turned.
No. Most kids at 19 don't know what they want to do. So don't feel alarmed by that. Did you know what you wanted to do at 19? I didn't.
No, I certainly didn't.
No, I didn't. I was always groping and searching. Nobody really knows what they want to do. Very few do, let's put it that way. Those who are driven like that usually want to become some bottom-feeding lawyer who deceives and lies to people. They have an idea from the time they're 9 years old that they're more devious and a better liar than their fellow kids in school, and they become lawyers. But other than that, how many people at 19 know what they really want to become?
Liberal arts, I feel like he's wasting his time doing a...
Well, they don't have an alternative called conservative arts yet, do they?
No, that would definitely make
no, me... No, liberal arts consists of how to put a condom on a cucumber, how to make it, how to roll a doobie, and how to hate America. Those would be the three liberal arts that they learn in college. Illegitimate hordes funded by God knows who, the Obama administration, the unions, the occupiers in D.C. are planning to use violence to disrupt those attending the Conservative Political Action Conference. This story was broken by Heritage investigative reporter Lachlan Marquet, who joins us right now in the Savage Nation to discuss this very disturbing story. Lachlan Marquet, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me. Great to talk to you.
So how did you break this story? How did you find out the occupiers were going to try to do this?
Well, I have a source who's spent quite a bit of time at various Occupy DC events, more because the person was just interested in what was going on there. But recently, it was, I believe, on Wednesday, we found out through Twitter that the organization was going to be holding a planning session for its protest activities at CPAC, at the Conservative Political Action Conference. Now, they normally don't tweet details of what they're going to be talking about, so we thought that was significant, and we expected there would be some significant activities that we could find out about beforehand and be prepared for, let people know we're going to happen, and hopefully spare some of the pain and anguish that they're certainly hoping to inflict on the conference. So I and my source both went over there. I didn't stay quite as long, so didn't hear some of the details that were in my piece. But what came out of it was essentially the highlights of what was a very detailed and alarming planning session for what the group has in store for CPAC on Thursday through Saturday.
What exactly are these street rats planning to do?
A number of things. The most alarming things that came to light in my piece were potentially pulling fire alarms or alternatively yelling fire in what will most likely be crowded areas in order to disrupt the protest, to try to get people outside, disrupt the conference, excuse me, try to get people outside where presumably there will be more protesters waiting to berate them. But we also heard that they might be doing some glitter bombing, which we've seen in the news lately with some presidential candidates where essentially buckets of glitter are dumped on people. That itself is actually physical confrontation. We heard other things along the lines of cutting electrical power, barricading entrances, essentially anything that they can do to make it more difficult for the conference to undergo its normal activities. But there were also hints at more sinister activities that weren't explicitly stated, but still I think are cause for alarm. And those were things, for instance, one person said, according to my source, that Mitt Romney now has Secret Service protection, but Andrew Breitbart does not. apparently suggesting that Breitbart would make an easy target for physical confrontation. There were also two protesters who were identified as members of the new Black Panther Party, of course made infamous by the scene outside a Philadelphia polling station in 2008, and they said they would be very disappointed if they didn't get arrested, and when they do, they plan to, quote, make it count. So those certainly raised some red flags on our end. We're hoping that it doesn't get to the level of physical confrontation and violence, but certainly there have been times when this Occupy movement has broached that line. So we're hoping, but we're also bracing for the worst.
Is it true that the unions and the AFL-CIO are helping these street thugs?
Well, that's what we heard at the planning session. We were told that, and this again was one of the things that I heard myself, in addition to the other source who was there, was that the person representing labor relations there said that AFL-CIO had booked hotel rooms for them, so where they could stay for the weekend, and that would essentially enable them to get into the conference without having to go through whatever security measures there are at the door. AFL-CIO flatly denied it. They said it's a rumor and it's completely untrue. So you can take that from that what you will. Certainly the AFL-CIO has supported them in the past, taking out advertisements online to support them. They even stored some of their belongings in advance of the National Park Service's raid of the camp last weekend. So it wouldn't be the first time they had aided them, but if there were violence or some other lawlessness that broke out and they were implicated somehow, that certainly would not look good for the organization. But again, they insist that is not happening.
Well, what can be done to prevent this from happening? Shouldn't the police stop them?
Well, both the hotel where it's going to take place and the American Conservative Union, which hosts it, says that they both have said that they have beefed up their security presence this year. They're confident that any potential threats will be adequately dealt with. It's really going to fall on them to make sure that it doesn't get out of hand. And I have no reason to believe that they're not up to the task. In terms of people who attend the conference, engaging these protesters is probably the worst thing that they could do, because it's going to escalate the situation. And it's also exactly what the protesters themselves want. They want to be given as much attention as they can. And I think that they're hoping to give the media who will be covering the conference something to cover other than the conference itself. So I think engaging them would feed that objective as well. So for people attending, I would say, be wary, be careful, make sure, if you feel threatened, then you're going to react the way you're going to react. But I would say try to avoid confronting them, try to avoid engaging them in any way.
Democrats such as Nancy Pelosi claim to have nothing to do with the Occupy movement, but they saluted them in the beginning. Don't the facts say otherwise?
Well, I think the indirect endorsements of I know Nancy Pelosi, I think, said something along the lines of, I love those people or something like that. So, in terms of hard evidence of support, I think that's about as much as we've received. But, there has been a lot of, considering the violence and lawlessness that's characterized a lot of these Occupy protests around the country, they haven't been quick to condemn them, certainly nowhere near as quick as they were with the much less lawless, virtually no lawlessness in the Tea Party, and yet you didn't see this kind of support from top Democrats, as you mentioned. So it's sort of an implicit support. I don't think I haven't seen any evidence of material support by Nancy Pelosi or other Democrats, but there is encouragement going on at the highest levels, whether it's intended or not and direct or not. And one need look no further than the president himself using the sort of class warfare rhetoric that the occupiers themselves use. Again, in his State of the Union, and when he unveils his budget proposal next week, we'll expect to hear more of it. So that I think is where their main support has come in, and I think it falls a little bit short of being full material support for the protests.
What can conservatives do in response?
the best way to counter them is to have a great time at CPAC, do what you were planning on doing, enjoy yourself, learn, and, you know, discuss what's going on outside and how best to counter that with your own sort of grassroots movements, getting your own message out there, because unfortunately, the agenda that these occupiers have is a very radical one, but seems to have caught on, at least in rhetoric, with mainstream political figures. So I think the smart thing for conservatives to do is to focus on you know, how to get some of that grassroots energy themselves, how to sustain the energy that the Tea Party had starting in 2009. You know, and when you put the conservative message out there, Americans tend to agree with it. So I don't think you need to do anything to try to, certainly not to silence these protesters. And again, I would discourage people from engaging them. I think just focusing on your own message is really the best way to counter it.
Lachlan Marquet, keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great talking to you, and your listeners can find my work at foundry.org.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You have to have a very peculiar personality to want to get up in front of an audience and perform. What do I need that for? I don't understand. What do people need an audience for? It's one thing to do radio where you don't have to look at anybody and tell them what you think. And if you make enough sense over a long enough period of time, you'll have a big audience, as I do. But to stand up in front of a crowd and have them clap, why? What kind of personality defect must you have to do that on a regular basis, to be a performing artist? No, think about that. You need the applause of mommy and daddy in the audience? You're that insecure that you need them to love you? It's an interesting psychology, the whole performance thing. I don't know. Don't people outgrow it? Don't entertainers act like they have enough acclaim and enough, you know, don't they say enough is enough, I don't need it anymore, I'm healed? I don't know about that one. It's an interesting one. Okay, let's take some callers. Jonathan from Washington State, wherever that may be. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Mr. Savage.
Yes, what's on your mind?
Hey, I had some life advice I was seeking. I'm currently an English major. I'm in my senior year, and I'm really torn between two careers, politics and possibly teaching. I want to get out and teach abroad as well. But I was wondering what your advice would be as far as
Well, if you want a career in the media, you're in the wrong major. You should have had a major in Ebonics rather than English. Mm-hmm. And then you might be hired by MSNBC, because the better your English, the command of English, the lower your chances are to work in the American media or in politics. In other words, the lower your vocabulary IQ, the lower your VQ, the higher is your employability by any media outlet in America. If you can say contraception, abortion, then you're hired by ABC. So you don't know which one to follow? Is that it?
I'm just very torn.
Let's start with this. What about making a living? Is that covered already? Did you inherit enough money to just kind of do what you want, or what?
No, I'm looking to make a career. I'm interested in at least I want to help in the 2012 elections. I have a few legislators that I'm going to be helping out in the
okay.
my local
so
area.
What is the actual question? I don't quite understand. Are you saying should you teach, or should you go into politics? Is that what you're asking?
Right. I want to go into possibly working as a legislative aide, et cetera.
But do you have an opportunity to be employed as a legislative aide?
I'm looking at if I volunteer on some campaigns.
That's how you start. You have to be basically an intern for nothing. And then if they like you well enough, they'll offer you a job. If you got enough on the ball and they can see you're really motivated, they'll hire you. That's basically how the game works, Jonathan. It's never changed. I mean, everyone's looking for a young person who's a very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, so to speak, who's willing to work hard. And then they usually hire you. But, you know, if they lose the election, there's nothing waiting for you. And also, all you are is a vine to someone else's tree the rest of your life. Do you really want to be a vine that wraps yourself around somebody else called the tree? Or don't you want to be a plant of your own?
I think probably not the rest of my life. I wouldn't want to be the vine around the tree.
Well, you see, but you're asking a very important question, and you have to decide whether you want to be a vine that wraps yourself around someone else's trellis or whether you want to become something of your own. And that's something you have to decide upon for yourself. I was never the type to want to be anybody's vine, to be frank with you. I mean, I always had to do it on my own, always. And sometimes it was to the detriment of my own success. But that's the way I am. And for me, it's worked out to a certain extent. The Loneliness of the Long-Distance Runner was a beautiful title, and it tells a long story. Don't expect to have a lot of friends if you're going to make it on your own and want to work on your own. You know, don't even look for that. I think that you'll find friends in an organization such as a church if you really want friends. Like, I look at the Mormon church sometimes. I think it's an amazingly interesting group of people. And I don't think I'm new to understanding this, because the years I was in the South Pacific collecting plants going back to 1969, long before the word green was popular, I was trying to rescue the botanical knowledge in the South Pacific. But there were many Mormon missionaries that I met. I met Methodists, I met Mormons, I met tremendous Christian men. They were wonderful people. They're amongst the nicest people I've ever met in my life, by the way. How come I don't see any scandals attached to Mormons, incidentally? I was thinking about that this morning. The vermin attack the Mormons because Romney's a Mormon, but they're very upstanding people. I don't know of any scandals attached to Mormons, do you? You name any other religion, you see scandals, right? How come there's no scandals attached to Mormons? Why is that? Could it be they actually practice what they preach? Is that a possibility? They're wonderful people. I had business dealings with Mormons many, many years ago. They wouldn't remember me. Back in the late 70s, I was a consultant in the herbal area, in the world of herbal, you know, herbal products. And I would travel to Salt Lake City. I'd have business meetings. I drank a beer at lunch. They didn't drink, but they didn't look down upon me. See, that was the difference. There was not a judgmentalism about these folks that I met. I said, do you mind if I have a drink? I mean, I traveled a long way. I was having a business meal. I wanted a drink. No, that's fine. We don't. It's perfectly fine. They didn't look at me a strange way. And that's the problem I have with a lot of other religions, which is that, yeah, okay, you're not like us and you're not as good as us. There's a tremendous judgmentalism that I don't like in many of the other formal religions. I don't care which way it is. So I'm saying this because when Obama came along, he was clearly a Muslim, even though we were told otherwise, or a Marxist Christian, either way. But we never heard much about the Marxist Christianity, nor about the Muslim background. They made no issue of it. They said, oh, no, you can't raise that question because that's the man's religion and that's sacred. But the minute Romney announced a year and a half ago, right away, every nasty crustacean in the business, every nasty crustacean crept out of the filthy mud and started saying, Mormon, 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 Mormon. I'm sick of it. I'm just sick of it. I think the reason I'm talking about it is because I saw an interesting movie the other day on television that reminded me of my youthful idealism. It was called, I think, The Other Side of Heaven. It was done in 1970, and it was about a Christian missionary, in this case a Mormon, and his years on a Tongan island where he was bringing Christianity to the Tongans. And it reminded me the zeal that he had, reminded me of the zeal I had at that time for rescuing, you know, plant knowledge, and I was going to save the world. I was going to find a new drug in the plant world, and I was just so fanatic in my quest. It was awesome, the passion I had in those days for that kind of work. In that way, I've always been sort of an idealistic social worker in many ways. And if you really want to know the truth, my work on the radio is not much different than that. You go back to 1975, you'll see I wrote a book called Plant the Tree. I put my heart and soul into that. I spent time at the Harvard Botanical Museum, and I researched it, and I wrote that book. I thought it was one of the most important, you know, books I had ever could ever imagine anyone could write. You know, I was going to help organize tree planting in every community in the United States of America to green America. Well, the book didn't become a big hit, nor was it ever talked about. But the fact is that it was all part of this pattern of my life, of a desire to make it a better world. And isn't it interesting? Here's the interesting part. While I have spent my entire life trying to make it a better world, the vermin on the left have so distorted my record, just as they try to distort the Republicans. Virtually every day of the week, they're lying about one candidate or the other. Either they're lying about Romney or they're lying about Paul, or they're lying about Gingrich, or they're lying about Huntsman, or they were lying about Bachman, or they were lying about Cain. They never, ever attack the vermin on the left, do they? They never tell you about Obama, or they never tell you about any of the others on the Democrat side, do they, and their shady pasts or their strange alliances. They don't ever mention that. And so when you read about me, you're never getting the right. You know who got it closest? Who do you think I feel wrote the best piece about Michael Savage of all time? The one that's closest to who I really am. The New Yorker article. I was thinking about it. He's the only one who ever got it right. And the reason is that although The New Yorker is a liberal magazine and the writer was a man who wrote profiles, he understood where I was coming from the point of view of as an artist rather than as a didactic polemicist. And the left only wants to categorize a few of the words that you say and make that into you. That's how they try to brand you. But the fact of the matter is, there's much more to any man, as you well know, no matter who that man may be, than a few words taken out of context. And this is not in defense of myself. It's just sort of a long discourse on a number of things that I wanted to talk about.
Savage.